Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Thank you so much for staying with us. Listen, you can actually call in and send your voice notes, your thoughts on that particular story. 086-000-00959. You can also send voice notes on 063-688-0959. Now, yesterday, just before we started the show, we were having a chat and looking very closely to a conversation that was meant to happen, a phone call between United States President Trump, as well as the Russian President Vladimir Putin. I thought it was a little bit interesting that Mr. Trump had to wait an hour to actually get onto that call. But nonetheless, I digress. That call did happen. I wanted to just talk a little bit about that call and the content thereof. Risk analyst and former diplomat is on the line with us. Dr. Kingsley Makubela, thank you so much for your time. Good evening.
Good evening, Pamela. Thanks very much for your time.
I have to ask you about the hour wait, long wait. I mean, it couldn't have been a coincidence, could it?
Well, sometimes in diplomacy, you know, they assess each other, and the virtue in diplomacy is patience. Wait for your turn, and as long as it takes, wait for your turn.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the contents. Let's remember and go back to when Donald Trump said, you know, I could end this war between Ukraine and Russia within 24 hours. Well, it wasn't to be. Did you think that yesterday's conversation was fruitful?
Well, you know, depending on who you're talking to. If you were to talk to Zelensky, I listened to Zelensky today. He was in Norway. Mm. He seems to put cold water on the discussion between Donald Trump and Putin. But if you listen to President Trump, he seems to think that they have closed the gap. But listen also to his representative, Witkoff. Mm-hmm. He seems to think they've closed the gap in terms of the differences. And the statement coming from Putin now is that he thinks there's a mutual trust between him and Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So all these are virtues for a fruitful negotiation. So you have to build trust and confidence in each other before you get into substantive issues.
Mm-hmm. Part of what's happening here is sort of a relationship here that's building between the U.S. and Russia. And clearly there seems to be an intent to build this relationship. The question I have for you is that would that have to be at the stake of Ukraine? In other words, will Ukraine have to be the one that loses out here for that relationship to actually formulate properly?
You know, the relationship that is developing between Trump and Putin, Pamela, goes back to my earlier argument during this conflict, that this conflict has its roots in proxy war. Mm. And that the two countries who could resolve this conflict is the Americans and the Russians. And that's why the two of them are now in this conversation. And the Europeans are crying foul play. I've seen they've tabulated their own approach. And they're having a meeting tomorrow again, a follow-up meeting, summit in London. And they seem to think around the table, the European must be there, the Russians must be there, and the American and the Ukrainians. Because they think that the conflict between Russia and Europe, it's between Russia and Ukraine is a conflict between Russia and Europe, yeah. And that they need to get involved in the resolution of the conflict. Mm. So there will be casualties in terms of this conflict. I'm talking casualties in terms of not being able to sit around the table, because the main powers that are really driving this conflict, the Russians and the Americans, are talking to each other. If the Russians and the Americans make a deal, this conflict is likely to end anytime.
It's a limited ceasefire discussion where they would sort of stop attacking each other's energy infrastructure. Now, I'm not clear, maybe you can help me here, whether it's energy and infrastructure or energy infrastructure. You will have to assist me there.
But they're talking about energy and civilian infrastructure.
Got you.
But there are claims this afternoon that there have been attacks.
Yeah.
in both side energies, that Ukraine has attacked Russian energy and the Russians have attacked Ukrainian energy.
Yeah.
I seem to think that, Pimelo, the Ukrainians are trying to push this notion that without some form of a peacekeeping force, there will continue to be violation. I think some of these things are engineered to try to strengthen their position in the negotiations. Because the Russians, I've read the statement from the Russians that appears on their Sputnik channel. They are saying there are drones that were already en route to their target. They had to issue out the plane to shoot these drones down. So the Russians are having an excuse already to say, if indeed there were infrastructures hit, it was before instructions were given, before what Donald Trump and Putin agreed on were put in practice.
So the reason I ask about the energy infrastructure is that, in a way, the pausing of this attack on the infrastructure would, in a way, help Russia in a way, because they have suffered quite some with oil refineries being attacked by Ukraine. In as much as, you know, obviously the propaganda on both sides is that we're doing better. But this attack on Russian oil refineries has hurt Russia, has it not?
It has to a large extent, because Ukrainian has targeted the energy infrastructure. But the biggest losers in this are the rest of Europe, who have been importing energy from Russia. I mean, I've just seen the statistic that I think it's the French, the Germans, I don't remember what is the third country, they have imported close to $1 billion worth of energy from Russia, $1 billion worth of energy from Russia. So there is still energy that flows from Russia to the rest of Europe, albeit via Turkey, some of it, and it becomes too expensive. But the Europeans are quite concerned about the public discontent, particularly during winter time, with lack of heating energy. And they've been importing a greater part of their heating energy from Russia. So there's political consideration. And I think the Russians also played into the public concerns around the energy flow to select the fact that we'll stop attacking each other's energy, because this suggestion seems to come from the Russians.
The what's been communicated for me, I think, is interesting since yesterday's call. As you said, you know, the Russians saying no, the call ended, and then we hadn't heard, and then the drones were hitting. For me, I think the timing is interesting. But the prisoner exchanges, the ongoing prisoner exchanges, the 350 people thereof exchanged yesterday on both sides, it is the 58th exchange. What are we supposed to read into that?
You know, I listened to President Zelensky during the press conference. He seems to think that the prisoners' exchange should not be seen as a breakthrough, because it's something that was in any way in the pipeline.
Yes.
But, Pimelo, usually prisoners' exchange are done right at the end of the war, because countries avoid exchange of prisoners and to allow these prisoners of war to be recycled back into the conflict. The Russia, I think about a year ago, they were quite dissatisfied with the prisoners that they released through to intervention of Turkey, because some of them went back into the conflict and some were recaptured again. And the understanding was that they shouldn't go back into the conflict. So it's usually very prudent to do the exchange of prisoners right at the end of war. And because these prisoners have been traumatized to a very greater extent, to recycle them into back into the conflict, it's a huge challenge.
Prof, I want to quickly just move on to the DRC. It's been quite a busy environment, and especially in the last 24 hours, that discussion that happened finally in person between President Tshisekedi as well as President Kagame. You know, they seem to have finally come to some sort of, I don't know how warm that meeting was, but It seemed warm enough. It seemed to have come up with an agreement. The question is, though, will anybody listen to the agreement?
Himelo, you know, the biggest challenge in my own view that Tshisekedi particularly is making is to shop around different mediators. So you're going to get a plethora of mediators who are involved in the conflict. You will recall that the African Union have recently appointed a three-man mediation that consists of former President Obasanjo, President Uhuru, and the former Prime Minister of Ethiopia. Now, he's gone out, Tshisekedi also, to try to court the American to intervene into this. And my experience, when you get a large number of mediators in the same conflict, you're going to get cross-communication. You're going to get the disputants actually choosing who they think is much more sympathetic to their position. And it creates a long process of finding and dealing with the substantive issues because the disputants are allowed to shop around what they think is convenient for them. No doubt about the ability of Qatar to mediate. I think it's one country that has really developed good institutional capacity to mediate in conflict. They have mediated some of the most complex and complicated conflict. I mean, they are the ones who make the breakthrough between the Taliban and the Americans. They've made a breakthrough between the Americans and the Iranians and so on. And now they've been involved with the Palestinian and the Israelis. So there's a lot of institutional capacity within Qatar, no doubt about that. But it's a whole concept of a large number of mediators playing the same role. I've seen this happening in Somalia, and it prolongs the conflict.
So yesterday, former President Kabila was here to see former President Thabo Mbeki on the same issue on the DRC. And he says, you know, all he wants is to see peace. And of course, he's right. He is Congolese, but he's also a politician. What do you think his ultimate goal is here?
You know, Pimelo, about 3 weeks ago, President Kabila came up with a statement that was very much condemning the SADC mission in the DRC. And he specifically spoke about South Africa that keeps on supporting the government of Tshisekedi that is killing Congolese. That's what he said. And then he made a very good statement to say this conflict won't be resolved through through a war. It's a conflict that requires political solution. I think he's trying to really galvanize that kind of a political intervention. The only thing that I could read from him meeting Thabo Mbeki is because Thabo Mbeki has institutional knowledge about the inter-Congolese dialogue that took place. And I still think, Pimelo, that to resolve the Congolese conflict, you need to go back to the drawing board of those agreements, because this was a very good agreement. Even the Pretoria agreement between him, President Joseph Kabila, and President Kagame, around the resolution of their conflict, they came up with the Pretoria agreement, which, if you look into that agreement, it still has very good foundation for the resolution of the conflict. I think he came here to say, let's resuscitate that those agreements to see how we can resolve the conflict. I don't know exactly what he raised in the closed meeting with President Mbeki, but he would have spoken about that. And President Mbeki has good institutional knowledge about the Congolese conflict and really to understand the political thrust of the Congolese conflict. I mean, I've listened to President Mbeki on several occasions speaking about the thrust and the core of this conflict, the root causes of this conflict ought to be addressed. And he understands them. Maybe that's why he came here, to try to solicit his intervention in trying to help. Again, it goes back to what I said earlier on, a large number of mediators that the Congo seems to attract would become the biggest problem for the resolution of the conflict in the immediate future.
To your point about that, the Luanda process, is what we're seeing just teething problems with M23 not quite going and participating and so on, or this is probably dead in the water? Well, what do you think of this process?
I mean, there was a meeting a few days ago in Luanda, convened by the Angolan president. President Lorenzo at that meeting, before he could even start to look into the issues, the M23 withdrew from the talks on account that, there have been sanctions imposed on the Rwanda, and because of this diplomatic spat that is going on between Belgium and Rwanda, and there was an excuse enough for them to withdraw, and that some of their leaders have been put on the sanction list by the Europeans. And that was the pretext for them to withdraw from the Luanda process. I was surprised then to see Tshisekedi having this meeting now in Qatar. You can tell there's a shopping, maybe not only from Tshisekedi's side, even from Kagame's side, shopping for a country that they think will be amenable or sympathetic to their position. And that's what creates a huge problem in the mediation.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about South Africa's preparing to receive Ambassador to the United States, Ibrahim Rasool, after he'd been expelled by the United States. Now, we both know that Ambassador Rasool is an experienced diplomat. What do you make of what happened and transpired over the past couple of days?
It has been a bit of a challenge for Rasool. Pimelo, a month ago, Rasool was on one of the TV here in the country where he really described his host, President Trump, in a language that I thought was, and I still think was, unpalatable, was not in line with the diplomatic etiquette. And I raised this thing publicly with the hope that somebody would intervene and say, listen, this is going to lead into trouble. This is about a month ago. Then what he said last week, I think, is what broke the camel's neck, but it has been coming up. In diplomacy, you are credited to the president. And the language that you use to describe your host president, you always have to be very careful what you say. In person, you can critique the policy. But to become very personal, and I'm saying very personal because Ambassador Rasool said recently that President Trump and his administration as a supremacist. He described him as a supremacist. Now, Pimelo, I battled to find the definition and I thought maybe my understanding's wrong. I went to the dictionary and the dictionary says a supremacist is a person who believes that a particular group, especially one determined by race, religion, or sex, is superior and should therefore dominate society. Now, if this is how you describe your host, those are very serious words. Even the ones that you use in a television interview that I'm talking about. He spoke about Trump acting with gusto, with speed, gusto, and viciousness. Now, viciousness, it means cruelty. That's the synonym of viciousness. Now, once you describe your host in that manner, you are definitely inviting serious reprimand. But given the tense relationship between the two countries, that's why you have this action. In the best of situation, in my own view, Pimelo, Secretary Rubio would have picked up a phone and phoned his counterpart here, Minister Lamola, and say, your man is behaving, man. He's misbehaving. We suggest that in the next 3 months, maybe to 6 months, find a way of taking him out. We don't want to take extreme measures to invoke Article 9 of the Vienna Convention. I think Lamola would have had the message and it would have been quite, handling this thing in a quiet manner. It would come out at one stage, maybe many years later. But coming now, it really embarrassed the Republic, particularly when there's tension between the two countries. I mean, this has become a laughing stock. I give an example, Pimelo, of a New Zealand High Commissioner who's accredited to the United Kingdom, Phil Goff. Phil Goff, in a Chatham House discussion, really compared Donald Trump to the 1938 Munich agreement that really allowed Nazi Germany to annex part of Czechoslovakia. And the New Zealand High Commission then recalled him immediately, even though he's not accredited to the US.
Yeah.
He's accredited to the United Kingdom. They recalled him because they thought the language he used is not a diplomatic language, because that was too harsh to really go and try to draw this kind of comparison in their view. So there are already two casualties now. It's our ambassador and the New Zealand High Commissioner with respect to how they are treating Trump.
So having said all of that, is it feasible that it was probably deliberate?
I don't think so. I think what in my own view, what Rasool did, all his comments were speaking to the South African audience. He lowered his guards. He forgot that he's still an ambassador. And then the language that is so polarized here about the U.S. and how Trump is being described by ordinary people like me and you who can do that. But he forgot that he's wearing this diplomatic hat. He can't do that. He can't insult his host. And I think because of that, that's why he got in trouble. In my earlier criticism of Ambassador Rasool, I said 1 month ago, I said he seems to be more concerned about addressing South African audience. And I said, that's not his function. His function is to address the American audience, to deal with the American. Now, when you are home, you are comfortable, you forgot the language. I don't think he would have used the same language in the United States, but because he was home. And to some extent, Deco should have long time ago said to Ambassador, please don't do this. It would have prevented what we are seeing today at Deco intervened. When I made my criticism, Pimelo, my only desire was that I hope the powers that be would see this and they would try to reprimand the man. And they would have prevented what we see now if institutional support was given to him.
So quickly for me, your thoughts on who should be replacing him?
I don't know. The president would have to decide.
I know.
But there's a procedure that has to follow. It's under Article 4 of the Vienna Convention, where the president has to nominate a person, and he must send the name of this person to his host in the United States, and the Americans must approve. The Americans have all the right in terms of Article 4 of the Vienna Convention to decline anyone that has been sent there, and they have the right not even to give reasons as to why they are declining Pimelo to be an ambassador to the U.S. They can just decline and say, give us another name. We don't think this name is suitable. But the countries always are guided by Article 3 of the Vienna Convention. Article 3, Pimelo, speaks about basic five functions of a diplomatic mission. One of these critical functions is to develop relations between the two countries. Good relations between the two countries. So if in any way the receiving state may have the impression that Pimelo will not be able to develop good relations, maybe because of his utterances in the past, they would refuse. I've looked into the Vienna Convention, you know, the history part of it. They're very interesting things. I mean, in 1891, an American senator who was sent to China as a minister, and that time he was envoy. The Chinese declined him because when he was on the Senate, made disparaging remarks about the United States. In 1977, you know, an American diplomat accredited to Greece, during the hearing in Congress, made disparaging remarks about Greece. And when the name was sent, Greece refused to take him. But they provided the reason, despite the fact that they don't have to. You know, the United Kingdom, the recent one in 2002, sent a candidate to Iran, and the Iranian declined because they thought this guy is a Jewish spy. What the United Kingdom did, they had to send a second name. But you have the option. You can downgrade your mission. Yes. If the receiving country refuses to accept your nominee, you can stay and not send anyone as a way of sending a message. Alternatively, you can make a deliberate effort to downgrade your mission, you know, and not have an ambassador, which is an affront to the receiving state to receive such a thing.
Wow. Never a dull moment in international politics, especially since Trump has been in office. It's been really wonderful talking to you, Dr. Makubela. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Pimela. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.